Tyrion shifted uncomfortably in his saddle. He was pleased that Cersei had not been idle, but wildfire was treacherous stuff, and 10,000 jars were enough to turn all of King's Landing into cinders. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we thought it was best to rename and rebrand ourselves as the game did so with a second edition. Now, we are the White Book Podcast, and each week we bring you your dose of strategy, insight, and all-around geeky goodness. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and world we love, but more importantly to you, our listeners. Please consider supporting us on Patreon so that we can continue to make this show the best it can, and I promise we have big plans for the future. This is The White Book. Jars. You know, I kind of miss the alchemists. What did they call themselves? The wisdoms.
No idea what you're talking about.
They refer to each other as wisdom.
Yeah. There we go. I thought it was kind of interesting that there was like a competing guild, so to speak, with the maesters that had lost that particular battle and had almost died out.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you read in like World of Ice and Fire, they actually used to be in very high positions of power, and their guild had a ton more members during the Targaryen reign.
Yeah, in fact, wasn't the head of their guild named Hand for a moment under the Mad King?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And they declined as magic declined from the world, as dragons exited stage right. So it's an interesting piece of world building that Martin did with them. So
I like those kind of little details. It just makes it feel more organic.
I agree.
Indubitably.
Well,
good.
Welcome
good
back,
world builder. Shitty writer.
Just slow. So slow.
I think it's phenomenal.
But hey, he's taking off time from his blog, so he focus on books, right?
No one thinks these two books were phenomenal.
I do.
I feel like we're back to having Luke on the show right now.
I love the books.
It's constant Martin bashing.
he owes me nothing. He's given me the best books, my favorite stories I've ever read, so I thoroughly enjoy them.
I
enjoy them. Like they're good reads. Like I'm on like my seventh read through. Like I really like the books.
Oh, dang. That is very thoroughly.
You're above me. I've only done like three.
I started reading them in when I was in like sixth grade. Like they're just very good. Like I don't think I'm not saying like they're like the best literary masterpieces that have ever graced the earth, but like I think Martin has given us very good stories. Like they're super entertaining to read.
Man, I started reading them. Sixth grade, you're making me feel old.
I miss Luke.
That's fair.
I liked it when I was one of the young people.
You know,
been a while.
Well, that's only because Greg is like 65.
I'm glad we can transition to bashing Greg from Aaron's modernist fiction appreciation society.
Yes,
not even modernist.
Bring back the classics.
It's modern, but it's not modernist. I miss Luke.
Maybe man. We can get
God
him
save
on
us from tyranny of English majors.
at least, unlike history teachers, we admit what we're teaching are lies.
I only teach the unvarnished truth. It's like a pure serum, the sweet stuff, the good stuff.
You just inject it straight into the students?
I do. With relevance. Boom.
Fear it's a serum.
Picturing your students like Bane.
Is that what you're referring to, Will? I mean, Roy.
Hmm?
The Vera Tessarum. Isn't that what it's called in Harry Potter?
Yes.
Theorem?
Yes. You're just winning the references today, Jesse. You're winning the references. Defending Martin, making Harry Potter references. That's why we're friends, man. That's why we're friends.
Hey, who wants to come on the Harry Potter cruise with me?
I saw that.
And
I thought you tagged your wife in it.
Yeah, I'm cool. Definitely taking my wife. I'm not like inviting you guys as my dates.
Oh, I missed that.
I'd go on a date with you to a Harry Potter cruise anytime, Glazer. Anytime.
Fair
enough. I don't think I could do a cruise. I think I would go insane. Alice says she will not go with us. So,
why? Because she looks like a blonde Harry Potter. It's unacceptable to her.
If anyone looks like Harry Potter in our relationship, it's me.
I
think you can both look like Harry Potter. You guys should both be Harry Potter for Halloween next year.
The number of times that I have been called a Harry Potter looking expletive deleted, mother expletive deleted, is X plus five.
So. First time I was telling my wife about you, Roy, I was drunk and I was like, you'll love him. He looks just like Harry Potter, but older. It's great.
It's true.
Well, you know, I just don't know how to transition. So
they're better books than the ones we're about to talk about.
Ooh.
Oh my god. Ooh.
Wow. Okay, let's move
on. Next week, Aaron appearing on the Harry Potter CCG podcast.
At least it's better than George Martin.
Hey, I bought the like Harry Potter box thing, and then I signed up for an award, and I won their like gift too, like their super exclusive card. So I have the box and the super exclusive card that I've never opened.
Never do it.
Have you played it?
I mean, the regular like co-op card game,
yeah,
the or the old game. CCG.
No, the co-op,
card game is fun.
Yeah, I like it.
A battle for Hogwarts? It's super fun.
I got to play with my wife, but we have a baby, so if we take out cards, he will just immediately start ripping and throwing them.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So, you know, when he's like 20, we'll play it.
Perfect. Okay, well, let's go ahead with that just hard transition, and let's get into the books that Aaron hates. Only we won't quite be there yet, so bear with us, Aaron.
I'll be
so, like a Care Bear?
Sure, let's go with it.
Yeah. I'm just waiting for like the fan fiction art of that. Hosts of the White Book as various Care Bears. I think it could be pretty quality.
That'd be the Stones.
Can I just be a Leather Bear instead?
Oh, this took a weird turn.
Yeah, let's talking about cards again.
Let's try that again. Yeah. Like,
all right, I take it all back. Aaron can talk about how much he hates Martin again.
Why now?
Okay. All right. You know, let's just go back to how about the Patreon? I've been saying we were going to kind of retool some of that. Been trying to make it a bit more interactive for folks. We've got the Facebook group where my co-hosts have blatantly ignored the team name suggestions from our patrons. Again, I apologize to you all, but it turns out my cohorts this week seem to be Team Hedge Knight, and the other team next week will be the Kingsguard. So there you have it.
I like it.
Yeah, it should be fun. We'll change it up again at some point, I'm sure, if prior years are any guide. We'll shuffle after a little while.
Yeah, when like six of us quit again.
Well, hopefully it won't be that many all at once.
Gently retire. That's how things happen in the White Book. Gently retire.
What was gentle about Luke's last episode?
I got nothing.
Telling you, if you ever want to make money.
You know, I'm just going to go into some of the various levels now. if you support us at all, even for a dollar, you're going to get access to the Facebook group. I'm working on setting up a thank you page on the website. And you'll have access to the list of quotes that I would like to have listeners record so we can start having you guys intro the show, kind of be part of things. At the $2 level, you get all of the below, plus you get an entry into the weekly prize raffles. At $5 and up, you get all of the prior, plus three total entries. And I'm going to put you on the short list of people I'm going to bug to co-host an episode of Things I Do for Love. And if you go all the way to the $10 mark, you get all of the below and seven entries for the prize raffles. And here's the part I'm going to dump on my co-hosts here. You're also going to have the chance to submit a deck list for us to analyze and tweak on air, or in Aaron's case, tear apart mercilessly.
So can I add something live on the air? If someone gives a certain amount of money, can you force Aaron to read the opening quotes to the White Book episodes from either A Dance with Dragons or Feast for Crows? Like, and I actually will gladly go through the database online that has the entire Martin canon and find the juiciest, strongest sentence structures for Aaron to read. Should certain people give enough money to the Patreon?
What kind of dollar amount are you thinking for that, Roy?
$15.
I'm sorely tempted to put that in myself.
I will sign up for $15 right now.
Fuck you both.
Okay, so the raffle prizes, I'm going to try to vary them. We're going to try and do house cards and, I don't know, t-shirts, pops.
I'll put up
maybe deck boxes, depending on what we have available. Jesse,
I'll put up a lot of altar. I'll put up alt arts for the prizes and stuff as well.
Sweet.
Aren't you an alt art whore? That's going to hurt your soul.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, Jesse's making sacrifices. This means something, listeners.
It's not sacrifice. The more alt arts in the world, the better I feel. I'm a spread the love kind of guy.
There we go.
Somewhere Sid just cringed and he doesn't know why.
Oh, I think Jesse's tournament, you're going to see Sid and Sandy's opinions about alt arts come out based on some of the ideas that they were tossing around this weekend.
Oh, man. It's pretty rough.
Well, speaking of alt arts, I'm going to go ahead with this week's raffle. I've got some extra sets, some White Book branded sets of some house cards I have done that we're gonna be giving some of those out at various Midwest tour stops at those tournaments. I know Jesse has some coming up.
Yes.
Geez, by the time folks listen to this show, they're gonna be like on their way. No. Yours is the weekend after.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Like, under whose American geography is Ohio West?
You know, that is a whole argument. I don't know if we want to go down. I personally would call it Great Lakes.
What's up, brother?
You got to defend it.
Well, you have to remember when these different regions were created to refer to, right? Like Ohio was the West when most European settlers were stuck entirely to the Eastern Seaboard and barely stretched, much further than the Appalachian Mountains, right?
You're saying that our Midwest brethren are so uneducated that they stopped learning back then. Got it.
No, it's just a lot of these regional names get tied.
We're gonna kill
hundreds of years ago.
I literally have nothing to defend. I grew up in Texas and then moved to Illinois, so everyone just thinks I live in Chicago. So and I'm 5 hours from it. So I love all of the Midwest besides Chicago.
You know where I think you live, but if I say it on air, you will kill me.
I do not live in Kentucky.
Debatable.
Okay, so this week, I'm going to start kind of teasing some of these house cards that folks are going to be able to get at various stops along the way. So I'm going to do these in pairs. So this week, our winner is going to get a White Book branded version of these house cards. They are all football club themed, soccer for most of folks listening to this in the States. So that style of kind of sports logo. And I'll put up some preview pictures with the episode when it airs. So this week, we're going to give out the Stark and Lannister house cards as a pair. So I've got everything drawn up here, and I'm ready to generate a number via random.org. Random.org gives me... Hey, look at that. The winner of the Stark and Lannister house cards this week is going to be Luis himself, LGB.
Nice.
So
these house cards are sweet.
There we go. Yeah, I'm really happy with how they turned out. So there we go. That's kind of the housekeeping stuff. Wound up taking me longer to ramble through that than I expected, but Luis, I'll get a hold of you to double check your address again, get those sent out, and we can mosey on to actual Thrones content this week.
Awesome.
So this week, we wanted to hit on something constructive, but I think maybe kind of general in application. So we hit on the idea of taking a look at the various resets available in the game, and we're going to talk a little bit about the pros and cons on these, maybe some decks that are better fits for some than others. And take it from that kind of angle. Roy was kind of giving us a rundown of the types of salient points we should hit on. Was that everything, Roy? Did I leave out a point you were thinking we should tackle?
No, I think that sounds just about right.
Okay, well, good deal. We've got a list of them here. I've got 8 that I've set aside as resets here in quotes. A couple of these, I think maybe stretch what a lot of people think of offhand, but I would argue they just kind of hit different points along the reset scale, right? Like resets are always punishing players for extending too far in a certain direction, and sometimes those directions are a very kind of insular vertical direction as a horizontal. So we'll get into that. We'll get into that, I'm sure. So should we just go ahead and
we'll throw a reset out. We'll talk about it.
Okay. All right. So I'm gonna work alphabetical down my list here. So the first one actually is one of these that some folks probably find the claim kind of debatable. So my first one is duel.
I don't find it debatable at all.
You think it's a reset? I think it's something like March, like a control plot.
Yeah, that's why I don't think it's like debatable at all. I don't think it's a reset at all. I think it's a targeted kill or I don't know. I think like to have a reset, it has to hit more than what you would say is one target. I'm not sure kneeling something is considered a reset, I guess.
I don't know. It effectively hits two characters and takes them out of commission. And similar to one we'll talk about later, it is kind of focused on punishing opponents going in too hard on these high-cost characters. Or at least that's how I generally see it played, rather than one of my own characters being chosen and one of theirs. The fair way, as it were.
That's fair. I mean,
go ahead, Jessica.
You're okay. I want to hear what you have to say.
I see a bit more of what Will's trying to say. Like, I think in an ideal world, and perhaps maybe the design space that John originally had it envisioned as, is it was something like a reset where an opponent went all in with a certain high cost strategy, like one of those old school Lanny Raines decks that played every 7 coster in the world, and you were punished, and the board was sort of brought back into some kind of harmony, or you were able to seize the board and seize the initiative back, and then that way sort of reset the game's tempo by sort of killing one of their best characters and kneeling the other, it's like a soft reset, I guess you could say, in a way that sure. I can see that. Like, it's definitely not like a hard reset in the way in which we'll get to the Valors or Wildfire, which I assume are both on Will's list, where you permanently remove these characters, or at least semi-permanently in the case of Violet O'Harris, from the board. But I do think it does play that role of controlling the board, resetting a lot of the tempo in the game that a reset should do.
I think Duel can be considered a reset the way I've been using
which
it
is
recently.
Which is how, Jesse?
So, yeah, I'm not scared to say it. I know. You played with Dragon. You played with Dragonstone Castle much, Will?
I have not yet. No.
All right. Well, so you just choose who you kneel, and then you duel, and they can't choose who they kneel, so they have to choose to kneel one of your characters if it's above a 7 cost, or choose to. You essentially just choose who they kill.
Right. Well, I think the practical. Okay. Let's give a practical example. So, like, if say you're going into the standing phase, and your opponent has Asha and Euron. You can use Dragonstone Castle to prevent them from standing Asha. So she's knelt permanently. Well, not permanently, but for the rest of that round going into the plot phase. And then the only standing character above 6 cost is that Euron. So that Euron has to die. Your opponent has to select.
No. That Euron has to kneel.
Then you kneel to Euron.
Oh, Asha dies. Excuse me. The other way around. Yes.
But
that's pretty nasty.
It actually works in every single house with the Withering Cold.
It does, yes.
A little less.
But it's a little easier to play.
Assuming they've kept one standing, right?
Yeah, Withering Cold is how everyone can abuse it. Bear can abuse it with Castle.
Yeah.
Nasty.
But I think you have much more control over it in Bear, and that's what makes it a power play.
It has two other reasonable homes, though. Those aren't the only places it could go.
I agree.
Roy, what's your house?
Tyrell.
No, your real house.
Oh, Night's Watch.
Yeah, Night's Watch. It actually beat me in round one of Thrones War. Wasn't expecting it. Had kept out some big dudes, was all ready to actually turn the board, which takes forever against a builder's deck. Got Roose Bolton set up and got King Rob set up, ready to just wreck their board. But he played Duel.
Yeah. Duel is good.
That was the end of that. And
I'm glad, especially for Naja's sake, that it's becoming less situational and just becoming a good card.
He hates it still. None of this makes him like it.
I know.
He absolutely hates the design on it and that it's limit one per plot deck.
Yeah. From what I understand, listening to Dark Naj, he had originally intended it to be to be able to go duel into duel, which I think is a perfectly reasonable thing that I think the playtesters over nerfed. John's plot in that case, but you know, that's a whole different debate.
I mean, I don't know if there's a debate.
In melee, man, double duel. What's a melee?
We're only talking about competitive formats, Will.
Don't be mean.
You're so cruel.
Melee,
Aaron. You have to remember that now you're on a team with three melee players.
Yeah,
that's true. He's
I am. Now. Yeah, it's amazing. Like, you can all be wrong together. It's great.
You're saying the duel is not really good in melee?
I wouldn't know. I only play competitive formats.
Duel's insane in melee.
Yeah.
You make a friend real quick.
And maybe an enemy.
yeah. But you put the blame on them, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'll choose you, Will, to pick whoever you want. You can make the enemies, but I just made a friend with you.
Uh-huh. And you've slowed everyone else down.
I'd be your enemy, Jesse.
That's fair.
Okay. Well,
so
go ahead.
So
go ahead,
Jesse.
I think Aaron had another house he thought it was good out of.
Yeah, the last one was the one that won Thrones, or came in second in Thrones War.
No, it won Thrones War.
It was in. It was in the Martell.
Mm-hmm.
Rose, right? Yeah,
it was he used it to own. Yeah, that was fourth, third or fourth.
Yeah, so it was in Two of the it's a really deck. Good in those low curve Arion based Martell decks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks to that Arion, they've got a real density right at that 5 cost slot that you know lets you still play a lot of very solid characters in dodge duel.
Martell has that fun draw army too that gets around duel. Aaron and I were playing that over the summer. That was super fun. It's like, oh yeah, my only 6 cost character is an army that draws me cards. When it comes into play, and it does, can't be targeted by duel. Have fun.
That card is also now totally unplayable in Martell.
Yes, I know.
Starfall Cavalry?
Yeah. It would be good if Great Hall didn't, for literally no reason, only work on uniques.
Because they wanted to push unique characters.
I get that. But, like, you know how no one plays any real armies unless that's, like, just a coincidental thing? Would have changed that in one real shot.
I'm sure we'll get some army support at some point.
If only they'd won the agenda battle.
Instead of that trash that is Maesters?
Battle work or whatever. Or the Trident.
Yeah, it was Battle of the Trident.
All right. Next up?
Okay, next up. Thanks to the quirks of alphabetical order, the next one I think is going to fall into a very, very similar category. That's marched to the wall. In a lot of ways, it can be abused harder from a control or an aggressive standpoint. But I would argue that it also can punish someone going all in. You know, everybody's seen that Tywin hand where they go, well, crap, I don't have my reducer Chud to go with him. If I set him up, he's getting marched, right? And go ahead.
I think I don't know if it's a reset for the same reason as duel is, but we'll get past that quickly. Whatever it is, I think it's the second most important plot in the game.
Marched is just as far as like keeping people honest, so to speak, on setup, or some of those more aggressive plays later in the game.
I think it's the later in the game stuff. I think House Martell is basically built around the existence of March to the Wall, and I'm not entirely sure how far Targ is from that same basic situation.
I mean, now that you add in any ways to manipulate discard piles, and that downside of hitting you as well starts looking like less of an issue.
Oh, hey, this is also for Roy. You should probably teach your players not to get mace marched, because there's literally almost no reason mace should ever get marched.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I agree. It is.
I mean, if you set mace up in a marked situation, you're probably going to lose,
like,
anyway.
In the mid game, like I've found like against rel players, I'm pretty often able to march mace. Like they are so excited to use his ability in marshalling, especially against Martell, that they forget that if they just used it in challenges, I wouldn't be able to march mace.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely sequencing errors that lead to people getting mace marched, but I mean, every time my mace has been marched, it's because the Martell player has pulled literally every trick in the book that they can possibly pull to get my board whittled down to just mace. Or we've come into a situation like where I once lost a mace with 9 power on him because all I needed to do was top deck on the previous round any character card, and I did not top deck any character card. But that was also because the Martell player was emptying my hand, clearing my board, doing all kinds of attrition-y things. So, I mean, yes, absolutely, a Tyrell player should, one of their fundamental goals if you're playing a mace deck is to prevent your mace from getting marched, but good Martell players can get
just like, but step one is straight up never using his ability of marshalling unless you're closing the game. Just don't.
Like, I disagree.
Oh no, just take the 1 power less and play safe against Martell. Like, Martell does not like that timer. They still take time to get that power. If you can have that extra character in dominance, they have a very different problem. And like, if you end up not getting that power that round, so be it.
I mean, you just count it out, right? Like, if you're safe to do it, you do it. Yeah, if you're not,
but you're never safe to do it. Wait. Like, there is no safe to do it. I've been able to clear like 4 or 5 characters off a board with Martell and just in challenges.
I'm slightly,
like, you're never truly safe.
I'm slightly confused. So you're saying that you should never use the ability to blink someone out from marshaling into challenges, is what you're saying.
Against Martell specifically. Perhaps against...
Well, perhaps. Why would you blink at marshaling? Yes.
People often blink from marshaling challenges. People very often decide that they're going to get their power right away. They're going to get someone stood or something else. But between
the only way I've done that is like the only reason I would ever do that is like if I need an HFK trigger.
Yeah, I do it for HFK.
I don't use it for mace. Like I don't use it specifically
people do
for
it
mace.
Literally all the time. I saw it walking around Star Pike like four times. I mean, I don't know if we could call anyone at Star Pike bad given our records, but people all the time were doing it. And every time I saw it, I was like, seriously? Okay. That one power now is not worth more than that one power in 2 minutes.
I still don't understand. I mean, I understand what you're saying, Aaron, and it's definitely something that comes naturally to people to want to leverage that to get the character standing. But I don't understand specifically how that character being blinked from Marshall or from challenges into dominance plays around Martell. Because
there's 15 ways to get them off the board in challenges.
But if they're blinked in, what does it matter? Well,
because they'll be in for the whole challenge. Right. There's no more blinking at that point. So if I can clear your board, then I can clear your board.
But I mean, I guess unless you do it as like your first action in marshaling, in challenges, like there's tons of bad things that can happen to your characters thanks to Martell. If you put them in the challenges.
Sure, but like beyond that one like five coster, most of them happen with the delay. Sorry. Besides Dorea or Ariane, obviously. Big Ariane. But like besides that, those two, most of them happen with the delay. Like if they jump into Venomous toward the end of it, that's something that happens at the end of the phase, right? Like you'd still blink. If they were going to Tears someone little to try and be able to get it off the board, that's going to happen later.
I'm never blinking unless it is specifically HFK. Like I'm never blinking in challenges because like I'll ambush or use Flea Bottom to get a mace trigger in challenges.
Yeah,
I want the blink trigger.
Literally exactly what I'm saying. But I'm telling you guys while you don't, like plenty of people do, and they should really.
I agree with you, Aaron, but like my point is I don't think it's a hard and fast rule. Like I'm because there's times when like, you know, the turn I play my mace, they put a Milk of the Poppy on one of my renown characters and I will pop him out so I can get the renown. And then it's all about, I think, the calculus and the texture of your hand. Sometimes you don't need that. You don't have an ambush card in your hand and you need if you calculate the power out, it makes sense for you to do that. Or you have the ability with the renown that you have to do two power challenges, but you don't have enough gold to ambush your girl.
I'd rather be careful at that point.
Yeah, I agree.
Almost always.
I agree.
I know we've got to be moving on and stuff, but if someone milks another character on your side of the board that's not Mace, Roy, you auto win that game.
I'm just saying, I've been there.
Shrug. Like, but there's so many
of them. You go into situations where the person has to milk this character because that character is running away with the game, right? Like I've had Knight of Flowers or Marjorie's that run away with the game.
That's still basically fine in Dom, man.
Yeah.
Like you're just not getting him for a round. Just don't rush. Like I know this is crazy to say in Terrell, but like you're rushing, but when you like you're rushing in that you're trying to close the game. When you rush to try and claim power too quickly, it's when you're playing into Martell's like I'm going to make you make mistakes, and I've got this card that you're not thinking of right now.
I agree with you. Okay, here's my point, Aaron, and I think we should definitely move on. So here's the thing that comes to Mace, and the more I've played Mace, the thing about playing Mace well, and I'm nowhere near the best Mace player in the world, the more you think there are hard and fast rules about how Mace should operate, the more you're going to actually make mistakes. You should always, like, every turn, you should be the minute you start the plot phase, not even sometimes, it's oftentimes the standing phase of the previous phase. You should start thinking about where are you going to gain your mace power for the next turn, right?
Sure.
And against the texture of your hand. In the texture of your hand, you should privilege using it to go into dominance. But sometimes you can flip, you can blink in an informant and run over a Martell player with multiple power challenges that they can't control, right? Or there's just...
Yeah, you better be damn sure that there's no way on earth they're getting a Hota in for one unless you're closing right then. Like, again, like, take the extra second, mm-hmm. like, that extra round, because, like, that play is not going away.
The more I play with Mace, the more he seems really like balanced for the game.
I think you're completely wrong.
All right. I don't think Mace is balanced or good for the game, but the more I play, I know, but I'm going to defend Mace a little bit. The more I play with Mace, the more I realize to get the most out of him, you really need to be good. Like, because there's a lot of sloppy Mace play, and I'm guilty of it as much as anyone sometimes. But
yeah, but like you against 90% of the houses, you can be sloppy with Mace, and it genuinely doesn't matter. True. Like against Greyjoy, who the f- cares, right? Like unless they top deck a Seastone, Seastone, it really doesn't especially matter. And very few of them seem to be running that anyway because range is their only good deck. But like against Stark, whatever. Like blink it when you want to blink it. Like, I'm telling you against, usually blink it when you want to blink it. If you think they have a ward, you might want to blink it a little early. But, like, against Martell, try and save it where at all possible. Because weird, bad shit's going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's going to start raining.
So the next one, I think, does fit the classic definition of reset. That one is political disaster. Definitely going a little bit of a different direction after locations. So is there a place for it right now? Is there a pro or two running it?
It's the most underplayed plot in the game.
It's the most what?
It is the most underplayed plot in the
game. I think it's only good in three houses.
I disagree.
What are you?
I don't think we have enough decent deck builds with this card. I think people don't build around it because we rely too much on locations and the game forces us into those, but I believe it is wildly underplayed.
Where do you think it should be played that it's not?
I believe it could be played out of several houses. You just have to like build the right house around it. I think it could be played in Greyjoy. I think it could be played in Lannister. I think it could be played
Lannister is one of my four. I think Greyjoy is an actively bad play usually.
I play it in Greyjoy right now.
I think that's too dangerous. Like, because all
Gates of the Moon fixes a lot of problems.
Yeah, sure.
Gates of the Moon should allow this card to be played a lot more.
I've got Breaking Ties too much on my head. I've been prepping for it for like a month now, right? Like,
that's fair.
So, like,
but right now, like a Greyjoy Reigns, Greyjoy Reigns or Greyjoy Crossing could play this card and it would be completely fine.
Sure. For the next couple of weeks, like, that's absolutely true. And then once Breaking Ties comes out, you can't do that.
Yeah, you can play this in Barra, it's fine. You could play
Barra's definitely this. One. Martell doesn't want it.
Yeah. No. I'm sure there is a Targ build out there that you could run it in.
I think that's just the wrong play.
Yeah, I don't see it in Targ. Tyrell, I think, could.
Tyrell could definitely play it.
See, Tyrell could. I just don't know if it.
I'll save my red wine straights in Hightower.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, what else do you need?
Nothing burns, right? But the problem with it in Tyrell is the pleasure burn.
Yes, I was about to say. Like by playing political disaster out of Martell, you're giving up the best Martell draw card.
Tyrell.
Wrong L's with Tyrell. Pardon me. Like, I mean, Height Garden is great, but it's not three cards in one go. So I think Tyrell, while you could, I think you like just like you could play it in Targaryen or you could play it in Greyjoy. I think the opportunity cost based on what the card pool for those factions are and where their strengths lie is too high. Not saying that there couldn't be a successful tier two or tier 1.5 or even like a tier one deck, maybe a tier one deck. With those factions, I think they're always going to be outclassed about decks that are leveraging those three factions' card pools.
Sure. I'm not saying I disagree with you. I'm just saying, like, we legitimately, like, maybe see it in one deck at tournaments we go to. Like,
three decks. Like, Bear's running it all over the place. Greyjoy's running it, even though I think that's still wrong. Stark.
I've never seen him in Greyjoy.
Stark. Oh, I have. I've seen it in quite a few Reigns builds. Stark still can leverage it. I don't think that's.
Sure. Bratz is playing.
Sure. I mean, Bratz is.
like, that doesn't count for the meta.
It makes perfect sense
that dude is good.
In Bratz's deck, though, because he's running the North Remembers and.
Yes.
Yeah.
You cut down on
and,
it.
Well, you don't want to run the plot if you can't abuse it. Like, it's definitely a plot that, like, you don't just slot in as, like, a flex plot. Like, you put it in to abuse it. Like, you have to base your
whole game
deck around abusing it. Yes, absolutely. I just think it is wildly underplayed.
I think
it just, like, auto wins you games.
Yeah, but I think it auto loses you just as many houses.
Sure, if you're playing it. I mean, if you're playing it shittily and not building a deck around it, I definitely agree with you, Glazer. I'm saying, like, if you build a deck around it, which it can be built out of those four houses, you flip Political Disaster and 50% of matchups, and you just see the look of horror across from you, and then they lose.
it so rarely bothers anything I play.
Well,
I mean, I know it's real bad for Night's Watch. It's real bad for Night's Watch. And it kicks the shit out of Targ. I feel like most other houses.
I actually think you're wrong. I mean, yes, obviously it can be bad for a Night's Watch player that's like caught off guard. But good Night's Watch players are always playing around Political Disaster because you don't have to play out all of you. You just need one Haunted Forest, one Abandoned Stronghold, and then if you lose them, you'll just drop back into them. I think the faction currently that it kicks the most is Tyrell, and that's go back to the pleasure barges. When you get Political Disastered and those pleasure barges, if you saw two of them, that cancels out your red line straights. That cancels out your Gates of the Moon. That cancels out a lot of your other economy. And then
you could technically build Tyrell without pleasure barge because they've got the stupid card that the mono intrigue icon that's name I never remember.
Old Town Informer. Yeah, Old Town Informer.
Why do all those cards have the same name? All right, yeah, the Old Town. If you have Old Town Informer and Hightower, you're usually going to draw enough cards.
Yeah, but it's still not three cards in the marshalling phase, which is really good. Like, spoiler alert, I've been playing a lot of Tyrell, and three cards in the marshalling phase is really good, particularly when then you can do in then you play one of those cards you drew, and then you draw another card, and you get a gold, and then you go into the challenges phase, and you ambush somebody in, and you see one card and discard another. Like pleasure barge is part of... Like, what... I think makes Tyrell really strong right now actually is Pleasure Barge, because the way to get that burst card draw, which can sort of just give you options, and then that sort of starts the chain reaction that goes all the way to the dominance phase of just like snowballing you with Tyrell's card advantage. But sometimes you need that jump start. You need that like shot of caffeine. You need that.
Do you run counting?
Some Tyrell decks do, some don't.
Oh, he's not as fun as you, Jesse. He's going to hide things.
I mean, but I mean that seriously. Like in my game, some of the builds, the Bitterbridge that I've been playing doesn't, but other decks that we've been testing are.
Banterbridge obviously doesn't.
Yeah.
Because there's not a summer trait on on counting.
But I'm just saying, like, there are other degenerate Tyrell builds that we have that are running counting. Like, it just depends on the texture of the Tyrell deck. But I
know a deck that runs counting. Roy, you want to talk about it?
No.
That's fair. I deserve that.
Well, in that case, then, does that go ahead and send us on to the next reset?
Sure.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, so
yes,
next up is one that fits, I think, what more people think of in this realm. That's the first snow of winter. Obviously, punishing folks going wide with low-cost stuff.
So this is meant to be a reset, but like this is an aggro tool.
Yeah,
it's an aggro. Absolutely. It's aggro's reset, right?
I mean, I don't know if it's aggro's reset. It's aggro's aggro. Like, it's not trying to reset the board with it. It's just trying to say, I'm going to make you kill your good shit now.
Well, but that's like, I mean, to me, again, we'll go back. I guess we should have laid this out at the beginning of the episode. Like, to me, resets are about restoring tempo. Or resetting tempo, and that's what First Snow does, right? It resets the tempo that players who play only low cost characters gain, which can be amazing. When I on turn two, I play four low cost characters while that's better tempo than playing one 7-cost character. But if I then go the next phase, or excuse me, next round into First Snow, you lose all that tempo from the previous turn, and I have more, right? Because I have that Tywin, that mountain, whatever. So for me, that's why it's aggro's reset, because it says it allows you to put you in an aggressive posture. By taking that tempo hit of playing higher cost characters earlier, you've now reset the tempo your opponent had by paying lower cost characters.
Yes, and then a lot of those aggro decks, if they're built correctly, can just abuse it. Like, they'll build around Flea Bottom, they'll bring them back to hand. Like, they'll bring those, like Martell will bring Dornish Spies and Hotas and stuff back to hand. Clansmen will bring all their three drops back to hand. Tyrell will bring their Old Town Informers and Olenna's Informants back to hand. Targ just loses.
I think maybe that is something,
it's real
like
bad.
A theme that's obviously being established here, right? That all of these resets are so much better if you are building your deck to abuse it. If you're not just planning on using it
Absolutely.
To reset and regain that tempo, like Roy said, but if you're using that to leverage yourself to greater heights from reusing stuff you bounced to hand with First Snow, or dodging duel completely, whatever it might be.
This legitimately might be the number one card I will be sad to see leave with rotation.
It'll come back as a gem card. This is already version 3 of it, so we'll get a version 4 eventually.
I hope so. I always actively think this card is good for the game. I think it keeps a lot of people honest.
Does it go anywhere really besides, and I don't know the answer to this honestly off the top of my head, but does it go anywhere regularly besides Martell and Lenny?
Tyrell could play it. They used to
like it more than they did. They do now.
I feel like it's really worrying and relic. I'm too close to killing my good shit when I play it.
Greyjoy could play it as well, but it goes back to like those little guys protect their big guys essentially. But they could play it if they were doing it.
So you have to either have good big guys or good jumper shit or both.
Yeah, I mean, Buzz had a Targ deck that played it, but I don't know how.
I mean, maybe if you're discarding stuff to fuel some effects once you bounce it. Stop my head.
With Flea Bottom, you're a lot safer, right? So I have a couple points. I want to link the point about abusing it, right? Because for me, the resetting the tempo is what allows you to abuse it, right? But I want to say, actually, where I strongly disagree with Jesse, I actually think First Snow Winter is like not a plot that keeps people honest, because it's a plot that rewards people playing really expensive swingy characters that can be balanced out by lower cost characters. And maybe this is, again, going back to my PTSD from all like first cycle Lannister, but like that was first cycle Lannister playing this plot was like the most dishonest decks in the world.
I think people also have to realize like my ideology for most cards is that always remember that the first pack that I bought for this game, like the first pack I got was Valor. So I never knew a world without Valor. So First Snow. Yeah, exactly. Right. So like I didn't have to deal with a lot of that stuff. Like, yes, I still dealt with Lanny Reigns, but I still could play Valor. So I do understand what you're saying, Roy.
But I definitely think that First Snow is a really interesting plot. I think we'll go Valor to O'Hare. I think it would have been smarter. I mean, they hadn't even designed the card yet, but it would have been smarter to Valor to Harris before First Snow.
I hadn't even designed my champ card yet. Yes.
Whatever, Aaron. That's a dead meme.
But hadn't they designed
Pale Mare wasn't out yet.
The Pale Mare came out.
No, Pale Mare was not designed.
So they hadn't even it hadn't been a twinkle in Danny and Nate's eye yet. But if I wish they had come to it, because Valor to Harris, I think, would have been better for the earlier game, and then First Snow comes in and sort of shakes up the meta in a way I think is much more productive, because at the time in which it was printed, there were a lot less answers for factions that really relied on those three costs and lower characters. And I think another thing that makes First Snow good in Lannister what was the other house that we said, Martell, is that they have a lot of like 5-cost characters or characters that they like that are good mid-rangey characters that they can lose. So, like, it's like why Greyjoy is not
Lannister doesn't have that at all.
Yeah, it does. It's like Tyrion, or it has a Jaime. It has redundancy in these things, right? While Greyjoy has Asha, Euron, Baelon. You don't want to lose any of those people if you first know, and those are the three characters you get, and your opponent goes into a marched, and you have to be like, ooh, what do I have?
Maybe Lord, like maybe Greyjoy has just as much mid range shit as
I don't think
it has the four cost that pillages and gets gold.
That's true.
Like Greyjoy, you do see just as much 4 or 5 cost shit.
I see Greyjoy decks becoming more and more polarized these days, which they have like very high curves and very low curves. There's no like the mid range is getting pressured out in Greyjoy because of these huge, awesome 7 costers that they have and 6 costers.
Triss. How much does Triss cost?
4.
Yeah. He should be 3x in every single Greyjoy deck until the end of time.
Depends on how prevalent Targ is, but usually yes. Right now.
Or Night's Watch. Or Combo.
Or Stark.
Or Tyrell.
Oh, that's weird. We just said like 7 things that
Triss No. Stark sub Triss. Ward that motherfucker. That's my Triss. You don't get to play saves anymore.
That's pretty fun. Yeah. Mortal Wolf stealing Triss is also
nice. One of my favorite things to do. Like I will hold on to that ward for Triss.
Alright.
I think First Snow's like if you see First Snow, you know the deck is running marched.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine running one without the other. Like, you can run March without First Snow, but I don't think you can run First Snow without March.
That's fair.
Yeah. I mean, you could. I could see people that are just trying to leverage abusing, bouncing their own stuff, but, like, why not follow it up with a March?
No, even then you run March.
But usually those decks abuse March situations as well.
I mean, March should frequently just be in many plot decks anyway, right? So...
I don't know. I think less and less plot decks really want March. Like, as we have more plots. Like, I think we're down to about...
The issue is, like, when you start playing things like Tyrell and Lannister that isn't Clansmen, or just, like, these mid-range decks, you start getting scared, because you're like, if I run into a double March deck, can my deck survive three March?
Embarrasses Riddle.
Right. So you usually start to, like, consider like maybe I just won't keep people honest with like by not putting a march in because like I can't survive.
You also have the
this.
Faith that if you end up a situation where your opponent sets up that Tywin or sets up that Baelon or something, that your top end is strong or stronger than theirs, then you can go card for card. And put them in situations where like they set up a Tywin but I set up a Renly. It's like are you gonna march here? Like which is
like I actively think March is becoming a subpar plot in Greyjoy. I think
it's only really good in Martell, Targ. Well, some Night's Watch, right? Some Night's Watch abuses the fuck out of it. Mm. But Martell, Targ, that little bit of Night's Watch, and some Lanny. And I don't think anyone else wants it.
And if you're a deck that wants like a March for your own characters, like just play Fallen instead. Yep. It's way better.
Yeah. I still think you should consider it. When you're building the plot deck, that should be like, does this deck, one of your first questions should be, does this deck want marched?
And when you're playing
it. You always talk about which reset, whether or not you're unmarched, and whether you put coppers in the deck.
And you're like, always, in every game, every time there's a plot revealed, you're considering marched. If you're not considering marched, you're doing something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't have to consider that First Snow is going to happen in every situation. You should always be considering a march.
Second, is that what we're going into now? Is what March next on your list?
No, no, no. We already had
nothing burns. I would assume.
Yeah.
Oh, we did. Okay. First Snow of one.
Next up, I actually had one that was not originally on my list, but I added at the last moment because you said I believe you said it was Wama swears up and down. This is a reset. Unexpected delay.
Mm-hmm.
This is one I'm a little more skeptical about personally, but I guess it maybe fits a similar realm as the first two.
I mean, it does the same shit Duel is.
Yeah, it falls into that reset-ish category that Duel falls into. And it's definitely a card that could be abused, and I think definitely in Melee it could be abused in really hilarious ways.
I've had a... I've had a few decks that I've ran double unexpected in.
So I feel like sure. I would run the fuck out of it if it had any damn initiative. Like, that one initiative is why I don't play it. It's not got nothing to do with anything else. I would suck up the 3 gold. Like, it's, I can't, like, the danger in playing this with one initiative is real.
That's fair.
Like, also, Martell Lake.
I don't think it's an actively good plot, but in certain situations, I think it's definitely good.
Kind of the weirder corner case stuff.
So we're going alphabetical?
Vaguely.
Because shouldn't First Snow have been before March?
No, it's
the First Snow of Winter.
The First Snow. Oh, my God.
Will counts the article.
No, I've got it on Thrones DB. It counts the article.
Why are we considering March a reset if we're not considering Nothing Burns Like the Coal?
Yeah, maybe we should. Maybe we should.
Make your case.
Nothing. I love that.
Lay it on us. Yeah.
I mean, like, it just, like, it can literally just wreck things. Like, it takes care of a location, takes care of an attachment. Like, I mean, it does the same thing as Marched, right? But just with a location. Like, it cannot be saved. If, like, this literally is the reason why bodyguards are not in the meta anymore. Correct?
Or wrong? Bodyguards are still in the meta in Tyrell. Yeah.
Are they?
I think it's, but either way, I think...
Maybe
I would never put a bodyguard in a deck right now because I'm scared of Nothing Burns. Like, if I'm playing Greyjoy with a bodyguard and you take out my bodyguard and an Iron Mines,
yeah, I don't think it goes Greyjoy, but I think it still goes in Tyrell because Tyrell doesn't have Iron Mines
or Baratheon.
Sure,
yeah. I mean, I play this in
Stark. Stark still wants bodyguards if it's running the big guys.
I don't think Nothing Burns is good for a lot of the decks that play it. I think when it works, it's one of those powerful decks in the game, but I think a lot of people use it wrong.
And like I said, I'm not sure like we should consider a reset, but if like the other cards were considering resets, I think we should touch on it. Like that's
so much like First Snow and
March. I think this
operates as one reset, this operates as a reset with Withering, right? Yeah. Political disaster. Yeah. It's political disaster and this, much like First Snow into March. Like, I don't consider Marched a reset. I consider First Snow a reset, but they're really like a reset in combination. I think Political Disaster along with this is the real reset.
Yeah.
Yes, to go absolutely.
Back, also, can Martell stop playing this card? Like, Jesus Christ, does Martell not want this card? You people are wrong. Stop.
So, if it's okay, I'd like to go back, actually, to Jesse's earlier point about people not playing Political Disaster. And I think one of the reasons why people didn't play Political Disaster until relatively recently was because there wasn't a card like Marched to follow up the Political Disaster, right? A smart player can hold back their non-unique locations, can dupe a critical location up so they're not ruined if they get Political Disastered, and then you have no follow-up, right, until Nothing Burns. And Nothing Burns is still a relatively new card, all things considered. People are just starting to learn how to abuse Tyrell cards. And we're like, 4 or 5 months out from the Tyrell box. So now that we have Nothing Burns, the Political Disaster into Nothing Burns play, which now everyone will know about, if you didn't know about it already, listening to this podcast, is like a legitimate and really devastating play for lots of decks like Targaryen, Night's Watch, and Martell. Like playing that Barra.
If you're listening to this and your local meta plays a lot of locations, take any deck with Political Disaster and Nothing Burns, and you will win some games. I promise.
You will really upset.
And
it is great.
It's another one of those, though, like you were saying before, that is really going to take you constructing your deck with it in mind. Like, you don't just throw this in as a last minute flex plot. Like, you have to be planning for that case, even when it's by itself, let alone if you're also running it with Political. I mean, if I'm running both of those, I don't think I'm running non-limited locations at that point, or at least not anything I'm planning on sticking
around. Tell you what, though, don't run Political at all if you're only running one good location. Like, I see people do that shit all the time. They're like, I'm just going to run Political and Flea Bottom. I'm like, all right, man, this seems like a mistake. Like, you do, like, and Sandy loves it in Targ, and every time he does, I'm just like, dude, this is why we don't let you build decks.
I think Nothing Burns is really, really good out of some houses. I think it's good in Bear. I think it's really
great
in Bear, good
it's great, great, it's great in Lanny. It's really...
I mean, being able to Nothing Burns, like their Hightower or something in Trissa is just so crushing. Or steal it with Euron, watched, or like whatever. Like,
I watched a friend of ours set up three walls and economy against Dark Nudge. It was entertaining. Heartbreaking. I'm not sure which. A little bit of both. Yeah, also, if you have a deck, a location that is completely pivotal to your deck,
don't dupe it on setup anymore.
Maybe don't dupe it on setup. Like, I don't know. Seems kind of obvious to me. Like, unless you're, like, damn sure they're not running Nothing Burns, just don't do it.
All right, sorry to take over there for a second, Will. I just thought we should touch on it.
I think that was very valid to go ahead and bring up, judging by the criteria you have for the others. So we're on the home stretch here, boys.
We have three left,
and I think these are probably the big three that most people really think of. Next up is Valardo Harris. Another one, of course, pushing it at the top end of things, and it's one that personally I was in kind of a weird spot. Like it was hyped so hard by certain people that may be co-hosts with me at the moment. And it came out, and suddenly I saw it everywhere for like a couple weeks. And then it was kind of like a culture shock, maybe. Like a bunch of these people that jumped on it suddenly backed way off and realized it wasn't working like they wanted and stopped playing it. And now it's come back in more force again. But I've
seen it changed the meta. Like, it didn't have to be everywhere. The meta became different, which is kind of what the idea of a reset is. Like, you have to build with it in mind. You can't just do that Lanny.
I think play with it in mind. You know,
I think when the card was talked about and like spoiled and, you know, hyped like so largely, I think everyone just thought it would be like Valor M, where it would be everywhere. But that's not. But at that point, right? Like, but it's not like, and it doesn't have to be. Like Glazer pointed to that. Like, it should be how it is now, to where like it is. It keeps. I think it keeps the meta as a whole honest. Like, I really like, unless you like can play Never Bet Against My Family, but. outside of that situation, like Valor D is very good for the. I think it's very good for the game as a whole. Like, mm-hmm. I love it.
I love it. It's my favorite.
I think whoever designed it is a genius.
Yeah.
I think you have a point, Will. But I think what it did is it. I mean, we'll get to its cousin in a second. I think it creates a really interesting play experience between dupes and high cost characters, because where the meta had descended before Valador Harris had come was basically a race of who saw their dupes with their big characters first. And a lot of games were decided that way. Mm-hmm. Unless you ran into like Targaryen, but there was like lots of games that were decided where, well, my Tywin was duped and yours wasn't, or my Balon, I saw a dupe on Balon and Iron Mines and you didn't see any dupes and it's game over.
I've got a follow-up point to that.
And what Valador Harris says is, like, you can have Balon, Euron, Asha, either Asha, Theon, four Chuds all out, and with dupes and all the Iron Mines in the world, but I'm going to flip Valador Harris, and that's going to legitimately thin that board, and you're going to have to make really big decisions about what's in your hand, what's, you know, what's on my board, what do you think is in my hand, in a way that I don't think where Valar Morghulis was at the end of last year, we were at. And now we're back to this, where there's a legitimate question of, like, which deck is my opponent, like, which Valar is my opponent's plot in my opponent's plot deck? Is if it's Morghulis, I should be playing for dupes. And if it's Doharis, I should be playing to see multiple characters and or go all in on one big impactful character that I dupe up to keep safe. But, you know, I have to be ready for my other two 7-cost characters to go away at any time. So
it
there's
is
a lot of tension.
Extremely satisfying when Greyjoy plays all three 7-costers. And you're just like, oh, this is going to be great. But, like, The advent of Doharis, and this is my takeoff that I thought of what Roy said. I think of it as the Wausau play, where like instead of worrying about duping their big guys, they instead started duping their little guys to control tempo. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that move, that like I'm going to dupe all my little guys so that like even if you reset the board, I can still maintain tempo no matter what, is part of why both Targ and Martell are so successful right now, because they're the two houses that have the most effective ways to say go yourself, little weenies. And then you just have a bunch of dead dupes. No follow-up point to that? Okay, we can move on.
No, I mean, I think you guys have hit a lot of the rest of what I was thinking, which was mainly kind of Roy's point about that interplay between the two Valors and the directions they push and pull. I like that type of uncertainty in Game of Thrones, particularly when it relates to plots, because they are, you know, the most unique part of this game. And so anything that heightens that tension in the plot phase, which is, in my mind, heightened by your uncertainty and knowing beforehand which direction you should be pushing with those duplicates, you know, I like that. I think that's always going to be a good addition to the game. I mean, as long as it doesn't result in analysis paralysis, I suppose.
I actually have to say that I think where the game is right now, because of the prevalence of dupes, that I think Valor Doharis is a more skillful plot in second edition than Valor Morghulis is. Morghulis, where it has become, is just a dupe that, or excuse me, it's you leverage dupes and saves. That's like the only thing it really gives you an opportunity to do. I mean, there's other things you can do with it, but that's like 75% of what decks do with it. While Valor Doharis, there's a lot of really different ways you can approach building your deck around Valor Doharis, and that's why I love it so much. And like, I mean, it's obviously it's great in builders and low curve decks, but there are decks that run higher curves, Clansmen, but also some Tyrell decks that can get really good mileage out of Valor Doharis.
So I think Morghulis has more than just that one use. Like, its best use might be that save leveraging idea, but like, there's also, I mean, it's a gold generator for Targ and certain builds, right? Because that's how they generate their gold. And Martell doesn't use it to leverage saves. Martell uses it because they believe they can reliably get rid of your dupes and saves. So they're just playing the attrition game, saying that like you will run out of saves and then my Valor eats your face.
Right, but that's the I take your point about Targaryen. I don't take your point about Martell, because it still makes it that dupe game where it's about controlling dupes, seeing dupes, managing dupes.
But it's not about seeing dupes. It's about controlling
for your opponent, because the deck doesn't, knowing that Martell is running Morghulis. It's about like dupe management.
But how would you know that? That's the fun part of Martell. Martell can run literally, I think, every single reset we've talked about besides the location ones. Every single character reset we've mentioned, Martell can run. Which is going to be really fun when Donovan's agenda comes up, by the way. I wish it had a name, but unfortunately it's just called Donovan's agenda.
That's fair. I deserve that.
Hey, we're also going to totally skip Varys if we don't actively talk about Varys.
And should we go directly to Morghulis, or do we want to do Varys first?
Is there anything to say about Morghulis?
I mean, I feel like in a lot of ways you get, like, we've hit on Morghulis as part of this same discussion.
Anyone have anything else to add about Morghulis?
I think we'll talk the Valors together. Like, what are the top three factions for Doharis? What are the top three factions for Morghulis? Jesse, you haven't talked in a while. Go.
Doharis is Night's Watch, Martell, and Lannister. And Morghulis is Greyjoy, I think. I'm just gonna, like, Morghulis is Greyjoy, Targ, and probably Martell. I mean, like just doesn't affect them, I guess.
I mean, I think somebody like Tyrell, or potentially Lannister, can handle that.
I think Tyrell falls, you know, I think Tyrell falls like somewhere in the middle with Morghulis. I think it's actively really rough with Daharis.
I mean, that's true. Yeah, sorry. I was just meaning Margolis. I mean, anybody that can set up a hefty resource base in order to offset that two gold turn, I think stands a shot of utilizing it well.
You know who's real bad with both of them? Start.
I don't want to talk about
real
that.
Bad.
Can we instead talk about Barra for Daharis? Because I really like Daharis and Barra. I just like, because I don't care.
I do
like,
as
Bob's
well.
Their only big guy worth a shit, usually. Like, not always, but usually. So, like, I'm totally fine with just Daharis. Like, get rid of all your better characters than I have usually.
And
do you want a big character that I can just kneel? Or just a bunch of weenies and then we're at a relatively even board?
Yeah, the fact that Mel plays so well with Daharis is a really strong point. Playing recommendation to Iron Throne players on Barra, playing Barra against Viola Daharis, be willing to throw Bob at the bottom of your deck. Like, there's a lot of Barra players that aren't willing to do that with Daharis, where I'm like, I don't know, I'm looking at their board, I'm like, if you keep Melisandre and some chuds, you're in a much better spot than if you keep Bob and one chud. But like 75% of Barra players I played against Iron Throne, they always get greedy with the Robert. And oftentimes, I win those games.
I think, like, I'm basically over almost every 7-coster in the game. I think Big Jon Snow is still a giant nightmare of board presence, as he stands and has stealth. And I think Ariana is the most underplayed card in the game. And, like, besides that, like, there's good 7-costers, but, like, I'm chucking most of them to the bottom of my deck when I, well, and all the Greyjoy and Tyrell bullshit, I guess. Those are the big guy houses, right? But, like, Tywin goes to the bottom of my fucking deck, no problem. Like, people will soon not be running the, what we are going to call the bad Danny. So, like, that won't be a concern. Like, the Stark shit just goes to the bottom of your deck because you don't draw enough. Like, everywhere else, I feel like the 7-coster should just immediately kind of go away.
I think she'll still see play.
Yeah, I think so too, because people are bad. Danny is another reset, by the way. New Danny is a reset. If you're not aware.
Well,
I think she's just like as aggro as aggro can be.
Yeah, I mean, like, so is First Snow. We call that a reset, so Danny's a reset.
I don't know she necessarily is. But I would say that we did accidentally skip including Blood of the Dragon, which I think is much more clearly in that reset realm. Only house to have a house only reset, I think, by most criteria.
Yeah, I can see that. I think Blood of the Dragon is overplayed.
Oh, I like that card.
I like that card a lot. I feel like it's about to get real, real good, right? But, like,
it's gonna be
I feel like a lot of the time when it's played now, it's not.
I wish you couldn't play them together.
With that and Danny, yeah, that'd be nice. Almost like there's some kind of list that could prevent that.
I
don't know how you do that.
Can't imagine what that would be. crazy thought. But, like, Blood of the Dragon, a lot of the times in Targ means you just get 3 free challenges. And that's cool, but, like, people don't, I don't know if it's not good or people just aren't really playing it at the right time, I feel like.
It was really beneficial to me during my Thrones War period with it. Like, it really helped me in every game.
Yeah, but, like, a lot of that's just because people had to play shitty things. Like, what does Stark do when you play Blood of the Dragon except get real sad?
Duh.
Yeah, like, it's just like, oh, look, bye, Brian, bye, all my, I can't draw any more cards, so you just cleared everything. Let's move on.
Or you could, like, next level me. You could, like, play Martell and then just set up 3 Bastard Daughters. And then it's like, okay.
Oh my god, nothing makes me more excited than when people play Blood of the Dragon and have Bastard Daughters. I'm like, dude, you don't draw enough cards for this shit to be a real play.
This is real bad for me.
Oh. I've marshaled Bastard Daughters into it just to be like, your hand, I'm going first.
Yep.
You eat that.
So we have what, one left? Wildfire?
Wildfire.
And Varys. We gotta talk about Varys.
Yeah.
Varys might only exist for another 2 weeks. But for those 2 weeks, Varys exists. Well,
I think Wildfire lost its way for a while, and I think Wildfire is slowly making its way back. I think Wildfire was the only reset the game had for a long time. So when I came in, I still saw it a lot, but I didn't really actively play it very often, except in Reigns. But I think it's going to be very good again. I think Wildfire into Daharis is like unbelievable for those. Like, it just destroys big guy decks. Like, if I Wildfire you and you have Mason Renly out and you save them, and then I just Daharis you the next turn, you just cry.
I think.
I feel like that's just a Barra play.
Kept though. Wildfire from maybe hitting the prominence of some of this other stuff is. Compared to the rest of these, it has been the fairest, so to speak. It's been the one that has brought parity most often, rather than being one that easily leverages itself into abuse.
There's nothing.
Wait, Wildfire is fair?
I was saying for a long period of time, it was the one that. Had less.
If you can keep Tywin, Cersei, and Gregor out, and I can keep like Arianne and two reducers, that is not fair.
I actually am much closer to Jessica here. I think one of the reasons why Wildfire kind of fell out of favor like ASAP, unless Dex, was that problem where like you're playing against Lannister and it's like, I can keep my Arianne, my even like keeping Arianne, Nymeria. I don't know, Doran, against like Mountain, Tywin, Jaime, and you're just like, ugh.
Well, right, but in that scenario, what you're pointing out is that it's less abusable from your side compared to some of these others we've already talked
about. Yeah.
I mean, it's just not a good plot 99% of the time. Like, it's amazing it should be in, like, every once in a while, people just don't run it in their reigns, and that always confuses me. Like, I feel like it's just such a good backup plan when you never have to play it.
There's virtually no downside to that.
Yeah. I mean, the opportunity cost is your downside.
Right. I mean, that's why I said virtually.
Right. But, I feel like it should be there, and maybe Barra, and I don't think it should be anywhere else. I think it's basically bad everywhere else. And I don't think that's new. I think that, like, even when people were playing it early on in the game, if you were aware it existed, it's the easiest.
I think it's thing better, to play around. And I think when you're running two of them, we saw this in Stalic 2016 with the second place Stalic deck that was running two Wildfires and was kind of just like rolling people because they weren't expecting that second Wildfire. And particularly with soft control or burn, I think running two Wildfires can be really a pain in the ass for a lot of decks. But I think if you're just running a single one, like, and particularly at this point, like as a single solitary one of reset, it's outclassed by all the other ones that we've talked about, including one that's not even a plot, Varys.
Yeah. And I think the two of, like resets do different things, right? Like some resets are aggro. That was a control reset. That was literally because I've got all these attachments that are just going to bounce back to hand, so I want to play them again. Mm-hmm. So you have to go wide against icon attachments or play Night's Watch. Or Night's Watch didn't exist yet. It's weird that they didn't release Night's Watch until like the middle of the second cycle, right?
Yeah.
Like you would have think they would just release that with the core set of the game, but well, what are you going to do?
So bizarre.
They were just learning from the CCG days.
So does it go anywhere with a Barra? Is it possible?
Not in Reigns, let's be clear.
Yeah, obviously. Reigns is Reigns.
I'm not sure.
Is there a Reigns deck that just doesn't want it?
Like Night's Watch Reigns doesn't really necessarily want it.
Reigns decks.
Yeah. You want like Game of Thrones and things like that instead.
Yeah. Game of Thrones were good in that deck.
I don't know. I like a lot of like decks that I ran Wildfire in have now switched over to Spider's Web just because it's insane. But
Spider's Web's pretty good.
I'm probably wrong.
I don't know.
I like
Spider's Web, like I feel like people use Spider's Web too early. Like, people often use Spider's Web pretty early, and then I just wait two plots counting, and it's like, that never shit never happened.
Yeah. I mean, and you gotta watch out for that reserve yourself.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, look, with Big Cersei.
It's...
Yes.
Like, no one thought that shit through, huh? All right.
Yeah, if it had come out a little earlier, when, like, Lanny Raines was king of the meta, it would have been a really frustrating card.
Yeah, real bad.
I mean, yeah. All right. Can we talk about Varus?
Yeah.
So, Varus is Valor for decks that just draw a lot, right?
I think Varus was just another option for attrition decks on top of Valor to just completely control the game.
Yeah, I don't think it needs to be on top of Valor. I think you can run it instead.
But a lot of times they didn't. They ran both. Like, I know, like, most of my attrition decks, I ran both to just make sure, like, you know, when I have my foot on their neck, I'm not going to lift off. Like, I just want to push down.
I mean, it still sees play in two decks pretty regularly.
What, theirs?
Yeah. Like, it's
in... I still run it in my Martell decks. I still run it in my Night's Watch decks.
Really? You run them? Oh, those Watch decks. Wolf? I forgot those Watch. Yeah. I always forget those Watch decks.
That's the only Watch decks I play.
Yeah,
but you're those are the only. Yeah, that's the only Night's Watch deck I mean, run.
Your Tender Marge deck should probably run one or two.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like Bitterbridge, I have like one or two in my Bitterbridge.
Yeah, you do. I was being sarcastic.
Yeah,
I don't. I say yeah, I do. I was like, you can just if you can like just go fetch a Varus, then yeah, he's like, good.
So does Varus exist in the meta in a month from now? Like, does he have to come out of those decks? Because there's two cards that make Varus real bad.
Which two?
Danny, I think, well, currently, so the card we need to talk about with Varus is Last of the Giants. So I think decks that can still do the Last of the Giants into Varus don't mind Danny. Because you just do it in the dominance phase. And she's, I mean, you're not going to, Tark's not going to be able to get enough events off in the dominance phase to kill Varus. Like,
so this weekend, I mean, you would need two events
so they in the dominance phase for Targ.
Like, two.
But
the character has to die,
right?
Or is it gonna, how's it gonna die in the dominance phase?
What?
The
new one that's coming.
The shuffle.
Okay. That's
the negotiations of the Great Sept. Yeah. That's one. And then, I don't know, Waking the Dragon. Seems easy enough. And like, you just...
I mean, I would still play Varus and call him on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just like, you know how this weekend I cut that Zekin Building Orders at CT's recommendation? Yeah. He was like, with my variants, I always see Aaron Hall, and I never do. Yeah, when I play Last of the Giants and Varus, my Last of the Giants will be...
That was what happened to Nate Tarantelli at Red Saturday.
Yeah, like... Yep. Like, legitimately, 80% of the time, if I have both in hand, doesn't matter if I have 12 cards, that Last of the Giants is what's going for entry. It's just, like, I don't bother. So, like, the only way you can play it is if you're playing Tender Marge or Last of the Giants.
I think the current way of just sort of marshaling him that you see a lot of, like, Night's Watch and some Martell decks do, and just, you know, he just kind of sits there and as sort of threat of activation or as ways to bait them into Valoring, you know, like I did that a bunch this weekend playing Bitterbridge, was I would just Bitterbridge in Varus when they were ahead in the board, and then they'd be like, oh, okay. If they have the nightmares, then they have nightmares and they often go into Valor. And I'm like, well, that's exactly what you want to do, because I'm gonna just play a summer plot and a big dude's coming down now. Or they don't, and I do Varus way, and then a big guy's coming down. Like, it just is a good way to, but that kind of play can't exist once Danny is around. Breaking ties,
like, just really annoying for Varus, like, especially decks that need Varus, because like Breaking Ties will stop that Last of the Giant shit.
I still think Martell plays it
cancel?
because you have the plot cancel, and then also if you're playing Martell, like if the Targ player across from you is like planning on you playing. Like if they have to hold back money for events, not Waking the Dragon, but for events to be able to kill Varys besides Waking the Dragon. Like, they don't know if you're coming at it or not, because Water Gardens exist and just allows you to do it for free.
So. Water Gardens, so good.
Water Gardens into a Varys actively pisses me off when it's not.
Yeah, I don't play Varys much anymore because, again, I told you my problem with
Left. Right, right. But like yes.
Yeah, that is a gross play.
It is very.
Man, I wish Star could play Varys. I spent like a week on just trying Stark and Varys in every Stark build I could. And like, I kept realizing when you don't have draw, Varys ain't so good.
I'm considered there's a Stark deck that can run Varys now.
I mean, if you can make it, I'll play it. No, I won't. I'm never playing Stark again. Let's not lie to you.
I think Stark Watch. I mean, it's better the other way around, but Stark Watch with Arya is still very is
all right. Really new Arya good. Is coming. New Arya makes everything better.
Yeah, she is. Well, it makes Martell Wolf real bad because you don't have to be honest about playing her. Like Night's Watch Wolf, we at least have to be honest about marshaling her. Like,
God, that's so gross.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is.
Does New Arya count as a reset?
Not by yourself. No,
he's kind of a reset. Good discussion, though.
Yeah. So,
yeah, absolutely. Hope you guys enjoyed that. You can tell us when we're wrong.
I always forget things.
Yeah.
Props and slops.
Yep.
I want to prop Jesse.
Don't be
I
mean.
I wasn't. I was actually going to be nice. We played what is possibly the most fun deck in the game. Didn't work out for us, but I still had a really good time. So, like, even though the deck decided to take a shit on me, it is probably the single, like, it's clearly not the best, but it's probably the single most fun second edition deck.
I agree with both those statements, actually. It is finally time. I will slot Clansman.
You're wrong. It's the most fun deck in the game, man.
It is insanely fun. It is insanely fun. There are four very strong players. I'm saying like two of these players are
okay, yeah, because Platt ended up
four of us that
it,
took
right?
the deck.
It's just
Yeah. There are four of us that took the deck, and the players were very good. I'm not even talking about myself. And none of us got more than three wins in a 6-round tournament. It just over half the field was crossing.
I don't think any of us got more than two wins.
All right.
Because, well, we all dropped fair. In the last round. So
it was just like the worst of the worst beats, and then like it was just a really bad. I'm up to the tournament, like, we were winning games of the deck. Yeah. Like, I'm still not convinced that Clansman is like a bad deck. Bad. It just is very situational, and if you can't take advantage of it,
yeah. And if you want to try it, guys, do us all a favor and play two building orders.
Yes. So I am sorry for this last.
Don't be sorry. I had a good time.
It was very good. It was very good, but it was single-handedly my worst day in my Thrones career by performance, but one of my funnest tournaments I've ever been
to. Which is props to Roy Rogers.
For running the Storming of Starpike 2. Congratulations to Scott Levine for taking down
the White Books.
Right. Hey. Right. I'm taking a down at literally like five of the top eight were crossing decks. One was Bitter Bridge. And he won.
I told him he was winning that tournament. He was like, no. I was like, it's the perfect damn meta. Like, no one was playing Greyjoy, and that's the only thing that really even bothers them.
But it really was a well-run tournament. It was awesome. The prize support was great. I urge you, if you live somewhere close to the East Coast, to hit up one of the last spots. There's still six left, I think.
Yeah, the next one is Tom Malucci's in Norton, Massachusetts, the Siege of Castle Rock, which is the 14th of April.
I might be able to make that. Are you going to that?
No, I am not.
Then no, I'm not. I don't own any cards, so that's not.
I don't think I'll be able to make Tom's tournament. Just I've been traveling too much, you know, after Jesse's event and running Starpike and going to Thrones War and just a lot going on. So I want to prop everybody who came to Storming of Starpike and Scotty for winning. And I also want to prop Will Entz, who will your first player token and the store championship Erie were the last two things left in the raffle. And you want to know what the last prize claimed was? It was your face, Will. So you can always say to yourself that your face is more valuable to players than a single copy of that game night kit Erie. So when it came down to it, they would always pick you over the Erie.
That's good to know.
Can I just say that Roy is the second best tournament host in the world right now?
After Ryan?
Ooh, bold claim.
No, after Aaron. After Aaron.
Oh, Aaron. Yeah, 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 Aaron, yeah.
Right, right.
I was like, for a second, I was like, Aaron. Oh, yeah, Aaron. Yeah, Aaron. Yeah. Well, and I think Jesse will outdo me with his name day tournament. So,
yeah, but if it weren't in Kentucky, he'd be doing so well.
Oh, no.
Oh, my.
So, when we first.
Oh, yeah, first you have said any, Kentucky, you have any props or slop, Will?
You know, I think my slop is good grief. Greedy. My prop is going to be two Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I've stuck with the show all this time. They hit episode 100 recently, and you know, while it's never going to be as connected to the cinema MCU as I would like these days, it was a solid episode 100. They definitely threw in some nods, a lot of fan service. They actually,
I thought they did a really good job. With
yeah,
it.
Sure enough, I was very happy with it. You know, I wanted that Quinjet to open and blow my mind with Fury or an Avenger standing there, but I was still pretty happy with everything.
Spoil it. Who was it? So,
Deathlok. It was Deathlok. And a bunch of past agents from Lincoln parts and backgrounds.
Is Lincoln back?
Earlier in the series.
Still in the sun.
Lincoln is
all right,
dead.
Did Roy, how's Jessica Jones?
I actually haven't gotten a chance to watch it yet. So
who are you?
I am.
You've been driving. How are you done?
When I'm not driving, I was watching it. It is very good.
I have a flight in a couple of weeks that I will watch several of those episodes on, and Al is going out of town next week. So when I'm not preparing for Jesse's tournament, I will also probably be watching Jessica Jones. So I have a slop for myself, which is realized that I am not flying into Chicago for Jesse's tournament. I'm flying into Indianapolis. So I have to rearrange my travel plans to get to Jesse's house.
Oh, no.
So wait, where are you flying into?
Indy.
Oh, we'll talk after this. Yeah. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, it's not a big deal. It's actually easier than going to Chicago. So,
I have a prop to my wife for allowing me to drive with no sleep to Philadelphia over the weekend, and let me play cards and drive back home. And
she's a saint.
Yes, she is. And then, go ahead and pre-prop her for allowing 72 Thrones players to descend into our Mecca and make her run the tournament all day. So, yes, I'll prop that.
Double prop that.
I think that's wow. I don't know what other props can possibly follow up a spouse prop like that.
Any that would. Would put us in
danger zone.
Oh God, I hate the way Jesse says it like it's a question every goddamn time. The danger zone, maybe. Could it be the danger zone? Maybe. That's hard to say.
He's too tentative. He'll get there.
God.
At least Jesse buys my corny setups. I tee it up, and Jesse's always swinging like a drunk Tiger Woods, swinging.
I love it.
Oh, jeez. Oh, that definitely closes this chapter of the White Book.